Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy! And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to hear Riley and I do blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Yeah, do it.
Do it. $3 a month.
Feed our family.
You can cut that out.
Nope.
Today's episode trigger warnings are murder and explicit sexual content.
And I have a Spotify comment, and this comes from Angel Goth. And it says, oh my God, thanks so much for this. It's like an amazing secret smutty book club. The book was so good. I read it before this and it was a good recap. You girls always make me laugh. And this was on the Little Stranger episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this week, we're telling Riley all about Huntsman by Naima Simone. And stay tuned to the end of the episode if you want to hear our ratings.
Yeah.
Eshi's mother wakes her up, and then her mother, the queen, dons an outfit Eshi knows well. She's going to kill someone, and Eshi goes to dress to join her mom, but her mom says, nay, nay, she's to stay behind this time. Eshi looks at her missing pinky finger, and her mom says,
you were kidnapped, held hostage, beaten, and mutilated. That would fuck up anyone's mental, even if their body was fully healed. And you're not healed, not in any way. So yeah, you're weaker than you were before. Jesus.
Yeah, and she's like a child. Not a child. She's a teenager, but yeah.
Mutilated?
They cut off her pinky.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's bad, but like, could be worse.
Do you need your pinky?
No,
not really.
Like, how often are you using it?
Just when I feel fancy when I'm drinking. She's never going to be fancy, but that's okay.
No.
I don't think she gives a fuck about being fancy either.
No.
Good for her.
Her mom also wants her to stay here as future oboe, so she needs to stay put. Her mom tells her to remember who she is, and then she's gone. But Eshi isn't going to listen. She dresses quickly, hops on her motorcycle, and turns on her GPS, locating her mom easily, and takes off after her. Her mom's Bugatti.
Okay.
Yeah.
Goes to the 33rd Club. As soon as she sees her mom exit the car, her mom is shot and goes down.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Wait, so she dies just like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. Chaos ensues as club members flee, and Eshi's aunt sees Eshi and mouths for her to go, so she takes off on her bike. We're in the present time. Her aunt Abina has been the oboe for 9 years since her mother died, and she's a ruthless leader. She's requesting someone bring her niece's heart. Then she looks to the huntsman. He's an assassin and a good one. Abina explains it's time sensitive and it needs to be done by the end of the week. He tells her it's going to be $5 million for the job, and she gives him a nod of approval. Abina tells him it will be in his account and to not fail, and then he leaves to go find Eshi.
Wait, so Abina wants to kill Eshi?
Yeah.
Why?
She's putting a hit out on her.
Yeah.
Why?
You'll find out.
This is giving me, like, what is that movie called with Keanu Reeves?
The Matrix.
Yeah, it's giving me, no.
Oh.
John Wick vibes. You know how they can, like, put hits out on people?
No dogs die in this, okay?
Thank God.
No. And this is also supposed to be a Snow White retelling.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Are there going to be little people?
No, there are no little people. At least nobody's described as a little person. Maybe they are canonically, and it's just not described as such in the book. I don't know. She does have the 7, though. Maybe they're all little people.
Visibility for little people. Where is it?
Where is it? It's like the new Snow White movie where they didn't hire any little people. They just, like, made CGI little people.
They CGI'd them?
Yeah, they use CGI dwarves instead of casting real actors with dwarfism. And people were mad.
They probably said, where would we find that many?
Hello, Peter Dinklage.
Okay, that's one person.
Okay, and then the rest of the cast from Little People, Big World.
Yeah. This is offensive. I already know it. This is very offensive.
Sorry to all the little people listening.
We love ya.
Tiny little kisses for you.
As he drives, he thinks of the one and only time he's ever seen Eshi.
Pretty? No. Lethal and fuckable? Hell yeah. She's fucking ugly.
No, she's lethal and fuckable.
But ugly. She's not pretty.
But she's not pretty.
Okay, but he describes her as, like, she's so beautiful, it transcends beauty.
All right. Do we know anybody like that?
I don't know, like Anya Taylor-Joy or something.
Don't even bring her up. Oh, my God. I didn't tell you guys because Andrew gets mad when I tell you guys. You guys are going to think I'm fucking stupid. Okay, he was watching The Queen's Gambit.
Great show, great show.
And I said something like, sometimes I think she looks so fucking weird to me, like alien-like.
It's the eyes.
Yeah, and then he said, he looks at me without skipping a fucking beat, says, sometimes I think she's hot as fuck. And then sometimes I think she's ugly. And I was like, you had to say hot as fuck. You had to say that. And he was like, no, that's not what I meant. He was like, I was just talking about like the spectrum, you know, like she's either really pretty or not at all. And I was like, you had to just add in
that. You said what you said.
Yeah. And then we fought about it. And then he was like, I have to finish The Queen's Gambit. And I was like, go ahead.
Go watch your girlfriend on TV.
Yeah, bitch. But I know I'm like sensitive. So like.
I think she's just very interesting looking. She's very interesting to look at.
Whatever.
On with the show.
It's taken 3 days for the huntsman to track her down to a little cottage in the middle of the forest. She's not in protected Mwaji territory or has guards, and he's curious as to why. He watches the cottage, seeing minimal movement, and then the hairs on the back of his neck stand up as a needle pierces his neck. He turns around saying, "You," before his world goes dark. As she watches him sleep while she trails her knife on his face.
I like it.
He came to her house.
Yeah. Sit on top of that man.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't forgotten his face from 2 years ago, but now she's going to have to kill him. He's chained to her bed and her anger builds. She knew this was coming, though. She's been stalking him for 2 whole years obsessively. Plus, she put a tracker on his car, so like she knew he was going to be there. He wakes, and since she is straddling him, she's instantly horny.
She's like in love with this man.
Yeah.
Is he hot?
Yeah.
Okay.
She takes her knife and presses it into his cheekbone. She goads him into confirming it was her aunt who sent him here to kill her, but he refuses to speak. So she decides to torture him to get her answers. She again asks if her aunt sent him, and when he doesn't respond, she slices his skin open. Not enough to kill him, but enough for him to start bleeding. This goes on again and again until blood has pooled on his throat and her panties are completely soaked.
Oh, she's a freak. Dipping my head, I lap at the base of his throat where the trail of blood has already pooled. The metallic, salty flavor flirts with my tongue, filling my mouth, my nose. A growl, feral and low, rumbles against my lips, and it only stirs my hunger for more of his essence.
She's doing some vampirism.
Yeah, she is.
His hips buck up and his dick is hard. She tells him that he tastes amazing, and then he finally talks, and all he says is, "Give me more." She licks his blood again and his hips thrust up again. She asks him if he would rather fuck her than tell her information, but he's still silent.
Since you're not feeling chatty, I murmur, scraping my blunt nails down the corrugated ladder of his abdomen. I'll do all the talking on your dick. Okay, a woman taking charge.
She is a woman taking charge. This whole book. She's a really cool FMC.
Love to see it.
He doesn't respond, so she cuts his belt off and lowers his pants to start nuzzling his crotch. But she stops before it goes further, asking for his consent. She even uses his actual name, Malachi. He says, "Do it," and then she pulls his dick out of his boxers.
I'm gonna damn near dislocate my jaw taking this dick. Oh, so it's big.
It's a big dick.
Big ol' wiener.
Then she starts giving him a blowjob.
With one hand still working his dick, I dip my head, returning to his balls, and suck one inside my mouth, rolling my tongue over it. That musky flavor explodes over my senses, and I not only savor it, I breathe it.
Musky balls.
Okay, and also dramatic. I don't only savor it, I breathe it. Shut up.
She's obsessed with him, though. She's been stalking him, and now she finally gets to sniff his balls.
Good for her, though. She gets to sit on that wiener, too. Good for her.
Mm-hmm.
Switching to the other testicle, I hum in anticipation and swallow him, teasing, savoring. There's no part of him I want to leave untouched. I need to claim him everywhere.
She puts his dick back in her mouth when he comes, and she also makes a cut at the same time right next to his dick at the base of it. So she swallows his cum and then licks his blood.
She likes blood?
Yeah.
I think she likes anything that comes out of this man.
Yeah.
Okay.
She does a 180, grabs her Glock, and holds it to his head.
She said, "Surprise."
And then she pulls the trigger. Only he's not dead. It grazed the side of his face and hit the headboard. He's happy he's not dead, but he wants to know what the fuck is going on. She packs up her stuff, her gun, her knife, tells him it's been fun, but she has to go kill her aunt now so she'll see him around, and then she's gone. He has to figure out now how to leave the cottage since he's still chained to the bed. But when he looks around, he sees the key to the chains just out of reach on the nightstand. So they were there the whole time.
Tee-hee.
But since he can't quite reach it, he has to pop his shoulder out of socket to grab it.
Oh, God. Ugh.
Once he unlocks himself, he puts his shoulder back into place, and now it's time to go hunting. 3 hours later, he's at home, but as soon as he walks through the door, he knows something's off immediately. Then Abina steps into his living room, calling her right-hand man out. Her right-hand man is named Mirror, and he has news. So it's like the evil queen and her Mary.
Okay.
Eshi isn't dead. Malachi doesn't say anything because she gave him a whole week, which was the deal. Plus, she broke into his house, so he's more mad than anything. She berates him and tells him that she was going to let him fuck her for doing a job well done.
Her lips curve in a grin, her eyes narrowing, taking on a cold, calculating gleam. I still might get the dick, but as I fuck your cold, dying body instead, the only good man is a dead one after all. Okay, girl.
And also, I think she's, like, old. Like, I want to say she's, like, 50s, maybe 60s.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're halfway there. Don't say that.
True.
He lets her know that he still has 4 days left to finish the job. And she says, nah, contract void. And then she tells Mir to kill Malachi. Two men enter his home as Abina leaves so her men can take care of the problem. Malachi moves fast, grabbing a gun from under his kitchen island, killing both men. And now he needs to find out how Abina located his home because he doesn't share the location with anybody.
Yeah. How'd she get there?
Eshi is on the phone with her friend and one of her seven named Tara. Tara wants to know why Eshi rode to downtown Boston when she's supposed to be dead. Eshi tells her she has a game plan. They agree to meet at the club, and Eshi is focused on this meeting because there is a 50-50 chance it could be an ambush. She parks next to Tara in the alleyway, grabs her stuff, and they agree to meet inside. Tara is to go around the back and through a fire escape while Eshi goes through the door. Once inside, Eshi sees a tall woman. She pulls her gun, tells her to drop the bag, and spill the information that she claims to have to help Eshi out. We learn this lady's name is Laura, and she works at the bar where Eshi's mom died. A couple nights ago at the club, Abina was there talking with a man. They mentioned a shipment of girls, and now Eshi feels sick because even though they do fucked up shit, they don't do sex trafficking.
I mean, yeah.
They do, like, drugs, weapons, but that's where they draw the line, which is a fair line to draw.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Do your crime. Well, not that crime.
Yeah.
Laura tells her that the shipment is in 2 nights, 11 p.m. at East Boston. She even brought proof. She snuck security footage and shoved it in an apple. Laura gives her the apple and a flash drive.
That's sneaky.
Yeah, it is.
Laura gives her the apple and the flash drive. All Laura wants in return is a safe way out because once they find out that she snuck intel, she's a dead woman. As she says, it's a deal and leaves. She meets Tara outside and they agree that this is all too neat and something is not adding up, but they have to check it out. Then she and Tara agree to call everyone to meet at her house tomorrow so they can start planning. As she goes to one of her many houses in the area, when she parks, she pulls up her secret security feed of her aunt's house. When she doesn't find anything useful, she switches to a different security feed, but this one is placed in Malachi's house, and it's the one that she installed last year so she could watch him.
Oh, you little creep.
She really likes him.
She does.
I mean, that's sweet. Even now, I've been with Andrew for like the last 11 years. I would love to be a fly on the wall and just watch him.
Ugh, what does he do?
What are you doing when I'm not around, you little creep?
Just farting, probably.
One of my favorite pastimes is checking them to make sure he's good. Some people have physical touch or words of affirmation as their way of expressing love. Mine is stalking. Right, you know.
Yeah.
That's like the other love language.
How many love languages are there?
There's physical touch, gifts, words of affirmation, acts of service, quality time.
Stalking.
Stalking.
Okay. Right.
She calls Tara to let her know that she made it home safe, but once she gets inside, Malachi is there. He starts stripping his weapons off, so she does the same. Then she pulls her shirt off to reveal her sports bra. He asks her what she's doing, and she says, "Are we not about to fight right now?" And then he notices his stolen necklace on her. They get into a physical altercation, and this bitch is soaked. She's loving it.
She's like, "Oh, yes, physical touch."
Yeah.
Yeah. They literally beat the shit out of each other. And when they take a break, she tells him Abina knows he didn't kill her, so she'll be after him soon as well. When he doesn't answer, she asks if that already happened and how it went. Apparently, it went not too bad since he's standing right here, even though she already knows how it went because she literally watched it on the security feed.
Yeah.
She's in the know.
She is in the know, but not making it known that she's in the know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Malachi asks if she knows where he lives, and she says she does, but she doesn't share that information, so he must be friends with the rat. She thinks back to her mom being murdered and how her aunt played the part pretty well. She knows Abina killed her mom and can't wait for her own revenge. But he snaps her out of it and wants to know where Abina is, but Eshi genuinely has no clue. She tells him that maybe they should try to partner up to find her aunt because 24 years ago, Abina hired someone to kill his mom and dad.
What the hell? Abina sucks.
Abina wanted the son of a rival and his pregnant wife dead. The son left her to be with this new woman, so she wanted her own type of revenge. She goes into detail on how Abina worked it all out, but Malachi and his sister went to foster care before Abina could get to them too, so she only got to their parents. As she approaches him and again asks for a partnership so they can take out her shitty aunt, he says, "Fuck you, fuck your aunt. Next time I see you, you're dead." And then he leaves.
You're dead to me.
Which, just do it right there.
Yeah, why didn't he just kill her there? I guess the book would end, but you know, he had an opportunity.
As she shows up to the Mwaji compound and her seven come out. With her girls having her back, she climbs the steps.
Wait a second. Her seven is girls? They're girls?
Yeah, they're all girls. This is a girl gang. They are a matriarchy. There's queens of the Mwaji. It seems like the men are just accessories.
Okay, I like that. I like that. Never mind. They can be full-sized people then. It's fine. Yeah.
Women in male-dominated fields.
Love it.
She climbs the steps to play a game of chess with Abina. Not literally, like metaphorically. Like,
yeah.
She goes inside, passing all the men with guns and straight to her aunt's throne room. Abina is pissed because she called Eshi there 2 days ago and she never showed up or listened to her queen. Eshi tells her that she had some unexpected business come up. Someone put a hit out on her, so she's been trying to survive.
Who could it be?
Abina does not care and tells Eshi that she's to come when called moving forward.
But, like, everyone knows it was her.
But everyone's pretending like they don't know that they know.
Yeah.
That it was her.
Why?
Because then they'll die.
I'd be like, fuck you, aunt. No, I see what they're doing. I see what they're doing.
As she says, yeah. Okay, but, like, I was attacked by the huntsman. Someone, again, put a hit out on me. I couldn't be here. The crowd in the throne room gasps, and Eshi just stares to see if Abina shows any sign of being guilty. Of course she doesn't, except Abina's eyes definitely betray her. Abina tries to say Eshi is lying, and Eshi says, "He showed up, tried to kill me, but I got to him first. I killed him. I killed the huntsman." Her aunt looks shocked now and maybe a little bit scared of Eshi. Then Eshi pulls out the balaclava the huntsman wore to her house and shows the entire room as proof that she killed him.
Look, I have his hat. He can't be alive.
Look at this hat.
He can't live without his hat.
She approaches the throne and places it at Abina's feet, saying it's a gift for her aunt so she won't have to worry about the huntsman ever again. Eshi then goes to leave, but Abina stops her. She tells Eshi that she forgot to bow to her queen. Eshi can't not do it or it's treason, and she dies right there on the spot. So she bows, straightens, and walks out immediately. Her and her seven meet back up at a safe house to strategize for tomorrow night. They've been working to get revenge on Abina for 2 years, but the hit on Eshi moves their timeline up. So now they're going to maneuver their plans to be at the sex traffic drop location so they can get her there.
Okay.
Until then, she gives all her girls their assignments, intel, how they're going to mess up the gun shipment, and she is going to go hunt the huntsman. When her girls are gone and she's cleaned up, she notices Tara's necklace on the table, which Abina gave all of her 7 necklaces as gifts, but they're all like kind of iffy about them.
Mm-hmm.
And as she studies it, she sees a small groove at the bottom of the apple charm. So it's an apple charm. And she pries it open with her knife. A small blinking tracker falls out.
Smash it.
Since the meetup at the house, she's told every one of her 7 about the trackers, and they're all using them to their advantage. So now, if Abina tracks them, it will show the locations of her girls at the warehouse and riding around Boston. But in reality, they will all be about to kill some sex traffickers and her aunt, ruining the gun shipment. As they wait at the docks for Abina, she doesn't come and something feels off. When only the client shows up, Eshi calls the mission. The 7 get out safe and Eshi tells them that she saw movement under the docks. She thinks it was a setup for them, but only Laura told them about it. When she thinks back at that too neat of a intel thing that happened with Laura, she thinks about what Laura said and what she was wearing. Laura wore wedding bands and rings, and Abina was wearing the same ring a couple days ago, which means that Abina probably knew everything that they got told at that meetup.
Damn.
And she got to Dakari, so information has been fed to her for who knows how long at this point.
Damn.
So Eshi has this warehouse where she hosts Fight Club, kind of, and she makes like millions of dollars off of it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Later that night, she's at her warehouse where the fights are held, and she walks in to Dakari, bloodied and strapped to a chair. He tries to beg and say he would never betray Eshi, but she pistol whips his ass. He says he had to. Abina threatened his mom and sister, and they're all the family he has left. She calls bullshit because if he just came to her in the first place, she could have helped. And then she kills him.
Oh, all right.
Because he jeopardized her and her 7's lives, and that's not okay with her.
No.
As her and her 7 go to leave the warehouse, shots fire out. A bullet grazes Neff's arm, but they're all good. Tara asks who Eshi pissed off now for them to get shot at. As Malachi sits in the packed warehouse later on, watching the fights, so like we're even further now, back to the fights.
Okay.
He's thinking about Eshi, and she appears. He watches her walk to her private luxury box.
The tight black leather that embraces the wide flare of hips created for a man to hold as he beats that wet pussy up from the back, watching the hypnotic rippling of her ass and the creaming on his dick. Jesus Christ. Who thinks like that? He's like, yeah, those hips are meant for me to hold on so I can beat that wet pussy. My God, what a description. Creaming on his dick.
Then he watches a man in a hood approach Eshi's box. He didn't know if Abina would hire someone again so soon, but apparently she did. He quickly approaches the guy and takes him out. He drags his corpse to a storage closet and shoves him in. And then he goes back to the main part of the warehouse, where Eshi is now gone and he cannot find her. But she sneaks behind him and tells him that he is hers and he should have stayed away from her. He has no clue what this bitch is talking about, but his dick is hard and when he turns around, she's gone. As he looks for her, a bomb goes off. He's a bit battered, but frantically searching for her.
A bomb?
A bomb.
All right. Jesus.
This is the mafia.
Yeah, this is crazy.
When he finds her, she's unmoving and he freezes. He will make sure whoever did this pays. It's 17 hours later, and she still hasn't woken up. He brought her back to his home, tended her wounds, and he's mad at himself because now how is he supposed to kill her?
Literally right now, just do it.
Yeah, at her weakest point. Stab her.
Yeah.
When she finally wakes up, she mentions that she feels like shit, and he's like, yeah, your building got bombed, and I had to drag you out of the rubble.
Oh my God.
She is now incredibly worried about her 7. He tells her that she can use a burner phone that he has to check on them. She thanks him and asks why he saved her. He doesn't answer her question, but he does let her know he will still kill her and enjoy it.
She blinks again. I think I just came, she whispers. She's like, do it. Wow.
He's disgusted at himself that he likes what she said so much. She then goes into full stalker mode and recites every single fact that she knows about him from all of her time watching him. He's confused on how the fuck she knows all of this, and he stops her, letting her know that the bomb was for her. He's like, we're going to table this conversation. The bomb was for you. Abina hired more people to kill you, and $3 million to whoever did it so they can also be the next Allori. So she's just like, whoever kills her, I'll give you family status.
I feel like that's big in mafia. I'm watching The Sopranos right now. I know.
He then tells her he believes it's someone named Poison. This assassin has been around for 10 years now, and most don't know about her. She has no moral code, and the advancement to Allori probably doesn't matter to her either. As she, though, she's not scared. She's just more annoyed than anything.
I snort, irritated. Now isn't the time to play whose clit is bigger, as she. Whose clit is bigger?
She says if he wants to compare them, she's going to have to add another body to her count, just like all the others, alluding to the fact that she kills all the women that he sleeps with.
I like that.
Riley says, I relate.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't killed anyone, but like, I'd love... I'm just going
to
stop.
I'd love to. Yeah. Love to do it.
He just stares at her, not knowing what to say, and then she moves.
When that fire throws back the covers and crawls across the mattress, my voluminous t-shirt riding up silken thick thighs, flashing a teasing glimpse of bare, plump folds. I don't move away. Plump folds. Is she like a little thickums?
I think so, but it doesn't like really say.
Her pussy is, though.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got a fat puss.
True.
Sometimes.
She shifts to her knees on his bed and leans back.
My shirt falls to her hips, hiding not one goddamn thing. Her legs cradle the prettiest pussy I've ever seen. Bare. The same shade of mahogany as the rest of her body on the outside, with a delicate pink on the inner lips. Already, she's glistening, as if just my eyes get her wet. With those shapely legs propped up, I'm blessed with an unrestricted view of her ass's full lower curves. Curvy girl.
He tries not to palm his dick as she tells him that she wants him. When he doesn't move, she's like, fine, I'll do it without you. And she starts touching herself as he sits there watching.
I lick my dry lips as she plays in her pussy, teasing her clit with firm, tight circles. More moisture leaks from her, running down her slit to the crack of her ass. Oh shit, I want to kneel before her, drink it all up, fucking lift my sheets to my mouth and suck them dry of every drop of her juices. He's just like...
She fingers herself and then stops. She then offers her fingers to him, and when he doesn't move or say anything, she licks them clean herself. But before she can put them back to her pussy, he launches off the chair to his bed and buries his face in her pussy and starts munching away. She comes and he wants to fuck her. He even starts stripping, but then his phone rings. It's Jamari, and he tells Malachi that if he's with Eshi, one of her seven is in the ICU and she should know. He didn't find any of the other seven in the hospital, though. He then hangs up, throws clothes at her, and tells her they gotta go. Pen, which is one of her seven, is injured. They leave his house, and he tells her no word on the rest of them, and she thanks him. They get to the hospital, and Eshi meets Pen's parents. He wants to stay, but knows she's safe here, so he leaves.
Pen has a punctured lung, a ruptured spleen, a broken arm, and a brain bleed, and Eshi is ready to go on a murdering rampage. She tells Tara that this wasn't Abina, at least not literally. It was some mystery assassin named Poison. Tara wants to know how Eshi knows this, and she's like, the huntsman told me. And now all of the girls want to know what the fuck is going on between the two of them. They all make a plan to finally take out Abina once and for all this coming Wednesday. So they have a date.
Nice.
They'll interfere with one of her drug shipments and make an enemy of her for the rival Donatos. And while she's dealing with the fallout of that, the seven will make their move. Just as they lock down their plans, none other than bitch-ass Abina walks into the hospital room.
Ew, Abina.
She extends her fake condolences, and all of the women are trying to contain their boiling rage. Eshi puts on a fake smile and tells her aunt that it's a miracle she wasn't there for the attack. It would have been such a shame if she were to have gotten hurt. Before everyone leaves Penn's room to give her family some alone time with her, Abina hands Penn's father, Brian, a solid gold apple, telling him it's a token of her love for their family. Always with the apples with this woman. This woman loves an apple.
I also would not keep that.
No, and he fucking hates her too. Like, he's like, cool, thanks.
I would throw it in the trash.
When Abina finally walks out of the hospital room, Brian mutters "fake bitch" under his breath, and Eshi orders Sienna to follow her to find out where she's going and what she's up to. But when Eshi doesn't hear back from Sienna after almost an hour, she gets a bad feeling and calls her phone. But an ER nurse answers instead, telling her that Sienna was admitted.
Aww.
So they rush down to the ER and demand to find out what happened. And apparently she got shot in the hospital parking garage and she's in surgery right now.
Holy shit. And that's one of the seven?
Uh-huh. The one that was supposed to be tailing Abina.
Oh.
The nurse hands Eshi a bag of Sienna's things that were on her when they found her. And when Eshi and Tara open it, there's a golden apple right on the top of Sienna's clothes. And now the war is officially on against Abina. So she's just taunting them at this point.
Yeah.
She finds herself breaking into Malachi's loft, and he immediately pulls a gun on her, asking her what the fuck she's doing here. But when he sees the despair in her eyes, he lowers his gun and asks why she's here in a less hostile way. So he's like, "Why are you here?" And then he looks at her and he's like, "Okay, why are you here?" She doesn't know how to answer, and she's like, I'm hungry and I felt like cooking. So she walks straight into his kitchen, but it's totally this bachelor pad fridge, and there's hardly anything edible in there. So she scrounges up some frozen stir fry and gets to work. But as she's cooking, he comes up behind her and cages her against the counter with his beefy arms. He tells her she's a sick little bitch, and Eshi just laughs and grabs at his dick, feeling him hard, and tells him he must be a sick fuck too. And then she starts stroking his dick. She tells him that she's not the type of person who's haunted by the people she's killed. And when she looks at him, she can tell that he's the same way. He doesn't respond, and she's still pumping his dick. And she continues telling him he's a pawn. And now he's pissed and steps back away from her, telling her he definitely isn't. As she says that he definitely is, he just might not know it. She knows him. Like, she really, really knows him. After all, how does he think she keeps finding him? And he's like, "Are you fucking stalking me?" And she's like, "Semantics. I do my research. But if you look at the cameras or the fact that I've been following you, yes, technically, I've been stalking you."
We love an honest girl.
Potato, potato.
It's just because she cares for him. Kind of, I think.
She tells him 2 years ago, she found him, followed him, and watched him track a target and kill him. And she'd seen his face as he did it.
I squeeze my thighs together as my clit thumps and liquid arousal spills from my pussy onto the sweatpants he loaned me. "What did you see?" he asks, his gaze flicking down. I don't need to bow my head to glimpse my nipples that are undoubtedly pushing against my sweatshirt. Euphoria, satisfaction, you like what you do. "Nah," I shake my head. "You love what you do. I might nut when I snap your neck, Ellori," he whispers.
She tells him that it's her fault he's in this mess. Abina found out about her obsession with him, and that's how she tracked him down and hired him. Abina had wanted Eshi to either be killed by the man she was obsessed with or have to live with the fact that she'd killed him herself. At that point, Malachi lunges for her. They tussle, and Eshi is loving it. So every time they are just like throwing punches at each other, Eshi's just like, "Yes, I love it."
She's like, "Beat the absolute fuck out of me."
She throws the stir fry at him and she whacks him with the pan. He's bleeding from the head and lunges again, but Eshi knows that this fight is basically foreplay and is going to end in them fucking. As he goes after her again, she kicks his legs out from under him and they both fall to the floor. She crawls toward him all seductively and is like, "You want to kill me, so go ahead and try." Just imagine the chaos, and she's just like seductively crawling towards him. She takes his hand and puts it around her neck, and now she's hella soaked. She says her thighs are practically sliding against each other. That's her inner monologue.
Okay.
He tells her to shut the fuck up and snatches his hand back, telling her that just because she stalked him and did some research on his past doesn't mean she knows him. She's here trying to analyze him when she can't even look at herself. Now they're tussling again, but this time he's pissed, asking why she's here and not at the hospital with Sienna and Penn. He accuses her of hiding. Someone is after her and she's scared, but she shuts him up and smashes her lips to his. He moans at the passionate kiss, and Eshi deepens it, and now it's on. And he has a button that you can't really press with him if you talk about his sister, because his sister died when she was 4 years old after being beaten by a foster parent.
Oh, God.
And she kind of brought that up in the argument, and that's when he got real mad.
Yeah. Oof. That's terrible.
He pulls back and tells her he's never kissed anyone on the mouth before. And Eshi's like, hold on, excuse me? And he says he's fucked plenty, but he's never kissed anyone before.
Men are so weird.
Yeah. He's like, it's too intimate for me. I only stick my dick in people.
I don't kiss on the lips. Yeah.
She apologizes for taking this from him. She didn't know, but he shuts her up with a kiss this time. He squeezes her neck and she leans into it. Then Malachi picks her up and throws her on the bed. He gets on top of her, but Eshi isn't having this and flips them so she's on top. She'll be the one in control. She grinds against him and he strokes her cheek, but she smacks his hand away and wraps a hand around his throat. And he's really into this.
Rub that pretty cunt all over my dick like you got an itch to scratch, I say, digging my fingertips into her skin.
My pussy's itchy. Give me that dick.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen like an itchy pussy. That won't cut it. You gotta get in there.
Yeah. She tells him he's being a real chatterbox right now, and he simultaneously wants to shove his dick in her mouth and for her to keep teasing him like this. She hops off of him and walks to his bathroom before returning and telling him that he's gonna be her gift to herself before she deals with her atonement. Before Malachi can ask what the heck she's even talking about, she shoves his face into her boobs. It's just motorboating. It works because he's grabbing at one boob and sucking on the other. She tells him to get naked, but he freezes, panicking internally because he's never had sex fully naked either, and it's just too intimate for him to be exposed and vulnerable with someone like that.
Oh my goodness.
He just humps and dumps. Doesn't even take his pants off all the way.
No, he probably just whips his dick out, zippers grazing on the sides of it.
Yep.
Pants up, booty covered.
Yeah, socks on, definitely.
Shoes on, ready to go.
Certainly. But he just sighs and strips. He crawls back onto her, but the feeling of flesh on flesh is just too intense. So he sits up and starts to jerk himself as she stares at his dick. He sees Eshi licking her lips and asks if she wants another taste. And she tells him if she did, he'd give it to her.
I just had you all over my face and down my throat, I murmur, staring at her puffy pussy lips and the small clit peeking out from the top of them. Oh my God, it's peeking out? My lips must be huge. She fucking shines. She's so drenched. Even as I watch, more moisture leaks out, and this time it's me who drags my tongue across my lips. It's only been hours. I dip a finger between her folds, getting it all good and sticky with her. Then I slide it between my lips and suck that delicious wet off my skin. I can't hold my eyes open when her distinctive flavor hits my tongue, sweet and tangy with a musk that's all her. Doesn't matter. Might as well be fucking days. Oh my goodness. They want each other bad.
So bad. Just admit it.
I know.
As she spreads her legs for him, and he dives right on in.
That hint of her doesn't compare to being face first in her pussy. I'm drowning in that delectable musk, gorging on it. I open my mouth wide, trying to take her whole sex in my mouth. Like a glutton trying to gorge on a feast instead of taking a piece at a time. There's no slowing me down. There's no patience. Not with my tongue spearing between her pussy lips. Gathering all that cream. Not with her pretty little clit fluttering with every lick and suck. Not with the small, tight entrance clenching and releasing, clenching and releasing. She is a buffet, and I'm the starving man who just pulled up to the table. Yes, sir.
Eshi is straight up riding his face at this point, but he tells her to turn over and put her ass in the air. And she's like, no, you get your ass in the air, and shoves her pussy back on his face. He eats her out until she comes screaming his name. He licks every drop off of her body, and he needs to be inside of her now.
I'm so fucking hard. Need to be in her so damn bad. I'm in physical pain. I want that. That rain shower of cum on my cock. Oh my God.
She asks if he's gonna fuck her now, but he realizes he doesn't have any condoms here. He doesn't bring people back to his house. He tells her he's never fucked raw before, and she's like, get in me now, and climbs on top of him. So he thrusts into her, and it's like nothing he's ever felt.
Her lips part on a silent scream, her head tipping back. I grind my teeth against the backdraft of ecstasy that blasts through me. Holy shit, this pussy is fucking fire. I still, all my muscles locking, I'm dying inside her. Or being born again. She's so goddamn tight, so wet, so blistering hot. Pussy fire.
Yeah, what a compliment. He's right on the verge of the best orgasm of his life when he sees her mouth working and she pulls a razor blade out from between her teeth. And that's why she ran to the bathroom earlier. But he just looks at her and tells her to do it.
Oh.
She starts slicing him all over his abdomen as he's screaming at her for more. She's still riding him, and she starts sucking at the blood oozing from his wounds and then gives him a big old bloody smooch. Sounds gross, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever floats your boat.
Salty.
He starts rubbing her clit and she comes.
Her sex is so tight. My cock is no doubt marked and branded. And yet, I still fuck through those grasping muscles, burying myself inside her until I can't hold out. Not anymore. On a low roar, I nut and it seems endless. Stream after stream of cum shoots in this pussy. We rock and grind against each other, giving and taking every measure of our release.
They collapse together and Malachi feels almost peaceful. This confuses him because sex doesn't really make him feel that way. He turns to her and asks, why him? Why has she been stalking him?
Simplest answer? I don't have an answer. At least not one that makes sense. Remember in Twilight when that weird-ass wolf inappropriately imprinted on that baby with the equally weird-ass name? Yeah, I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. No, you didn't miss much. But what I'm saying is, this is the first time I saw you. You imprinted on me. Oh my god. Renesmee! <Yep. laughs>
Basically, she can't stay away, even though she knows she should. But she can't, and she won't. She was born into violence and has seen all of the ugliness in the world, and she knows beauty when she sees it. And she sees it in him. He's a beautiful nightmare. She leans over him and opens one of his cuts, licking the blood that pools out of it, then climbs back on top of him, sliding him into her again, and he thinks to himself that she's his beautiful nightmare, too. After their sex session, Eshi finds herself at the compound ready to initiate an all-out war on the Mwaji, but Malachi finds her first and is like, this is stupid as fuck. Why are you here when you should be at the hospital with your friends? This is a suicide mission. And she's like, you only give a shit because you want to be the one to kill me yourself, and he doesn't deny it.
Well, damn. I jam my fist on my hips. My pussy's still curving to your dick and you're out here talking about murdering me. I'm just telling you right now, you want back in this good shit. I point down between my legs. You're gonna have to come with flowers, candy, or some new throwing knives. Something. I mean, serious groveling. Yeah, for real. His dick was just in her and he's like, I am gonna kill you.
She ditches his ass and breaks into the compound. It's silent and empty, so she starts making her way up to Abina's apartment. But before she can carry out her plan, Malachi is inside with her, telling her to knock it the fuck off. She won't, so he's just resigned to help her at this point. She follows him down the corridor, and they work together as a team to take out guards and stay as silent as possible. At the last guard outside Abina's door, they hold a knife to his throat, and Eshi tells the terrified man to go on in and give Abina her tea just like normal, and no funny business if he wants to live. The man complies, and they slip in after him. Eshi has a gun drawn and says, hello, auntie, as Abina lays all snug in her plushy bed.
Shoot her.
Abina calls Eshi a disrespectful piece of shit, and she's so sick of all this drama over the fact that her mother got killed. It was her sister, too, and she was a cunt. Abina tells her she'll never be her precious mother. She'll never get the throne. But then Malachi steps out from behind Eshi, and Abina's like, what the fuck? You're supposed to be dead. In the chaos that immediately ensues, Eshi pistol whips Abina across the face. She points the gun at her aunt's head and goes to pull the trigger, but the bullet doesn't hit Abina. As a man tackles Eshi to the ground. It's Econ, Abina's right-hand man, which is Mirror. While Eshi's on the ground trying to get her bearings, Econ hops up, grabs Abina, and pulls her into a secret passageway to make their escape. So this house is booby-trapped as hell.
Yeah.
There are bangs against the locked bedroom door as Abina's guards are trying to get inside, and the guard that they threatened to let them into the room says, okay, so there's another secret passageway. Take it and get out before the other men get in here, but you have to hit me before you go. Malachi doesn't think twice before he knocks the man out cold. So he wanted to help them, but he also didn't want to get killed. So the other guards are going to come in, and then he can be like, oh, they hit me. I don't know where they went.
It's so funny. Malachi's just like, don't ask me twice. Bow.
All right, cool. Say less. They find the hidden door just as the guards bust the door down and slip inside. Once they make it through the secret tunnel, they find themselves outside in the yard. Now Eshi and Malachi have to work together to take out the numerous guards to get out of this pickle. They work together well, taking out man after man, and finally they reach the tall barbed wire fence that surrounds the property. Malachi scales it easily, but Eshi's sweatshirt gets stuck at the top. She goes to call for him to help her, but he's gone. He left her. And she's just stuck at the top of a fence.
Wait, Malachi left her?
Yeah, he said, peace.
Oh, damn.
Malachi is booking it through the woods, telling himself he doesn't owe Eshi anything. He doesn't need to go back for her. His internal monologue tells him to go back for her. So he heads back and climbs up to her, shooting at the men who are trying to drag her down. So his conscience got the better of him.
Good. You just fucked her. The least you could do is, like, help her down.
Yeah, but, like, he's gonna kill her.
Yeah, but, like, help her down for right now.
Yeah.
Kill her later.
Yeah, but he also can't let other people kill her.
Yeah.
That's true. It's his kill.
Yeah.
Just as they're getting overrun and it seems like Eshi isn't going to be rescued, another shooter enters the fight and Malachi can see the shadow of a woman taking out the guards one by one from the roof of the compound. And Malachi knows this is the elusive poison. It just has to be. Finally, he gets Eshi unstuck from the fence and they hop down, running away to safety. He leads Eshi to the river where Jamari is waiting for him in a canoe. And Jamari's so cute. He's like a little teenage boy that kind of follows Malachi around like a lost puppy. But he's also a genius. So he can like hack into the CIA's mainframe.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
As they row down the river, he looks over at Eshi, who looks utterly defeated. He almost feels a soft spot for her right now and he hates it. Jamari makes this weird Lord of the Rings joke, breaking the tension, and as Malachi lets out a chuckle at the absurdity of joking at a time like this, both Jamari and Eshi stare at him like he just grew an extra head, because he doesn't laugh. So they're like, what the fuck?
Like, who is this man?
I forget what the joke was, something about, like, Samwise Gamgee. He realizes they're staring at him for laughing and says, fuck the both of you. And now Eshi and Jamari are just busting out laughing as the canoe floats down the river. By the time the sun starts to rise, Malachi is back at home with Eshi. All he wants is a shower, a nap, and some coffee. Then he wants to finish the job and kill Abina. As he starts up the old coffee machine, Eshi walks into the kitchen with a broom and a dustpan and starts cleaning up the floors from their little scuffle. Because remember, they fully destroyed his entire house. She like threw stir fry at him and shit.
Yeah, that's right.
They talk a little bit about Jamari, and Eshi thinks he's a super sweet kid who needs to be protected at all costs. But Malachi just tells her he's tried to get Jamari to leave him alone numerous times, but he's stubborn as hell and sticks around. Then Eshi starts full-on mopping his floors, and when she's done, she starts scrubbing his dishes, and he's like, okay, stop, you don't have to do that. But she says right now she needs this, and he's like, no, what we both need is a shower and some sleep. But she tells him not to try and tell her what she needs.
You got two choices. Either I can give you a hit of this dick to calm your little ass down, or you can get in that fucking shower and take your ass to sleep so we can figure out our next step with Abina. What's it gonna be, Ellori? Fuck him. Fuck him.
Eshi takes a deep breath and gives in, saying she wants to shower. Once again, he's finding himself with a soft spot for her and chastises himself, mentally reminding himself that she stalked him. But then he realizes he's hard right now and he may actually care for this woman for some reason. Eshi snaps him out of his thoughts and is like, okay, so I'm gonna go shower now. And when she goes into the bathroom, she uses a burner phone Malachi lent her and calls Tara to tell her what went down tonight. And Tara's fucking pissed that Eshi went rogue and put her life in jeopardy like this when they had a whole plan mapped out. She tells Tara that seeing the girls in the hospital just filled her with so much rage and she had to take out Abina and she just couldn't wait. Tara can tell Eshi is spiraling and asks where she is so she can come over and talk to her. But Eshi's like, no, it's fine. I'm with the huntsman. And Tara's like, are you fucking insane? Because remember, he fully tried to kill her.
Yeah, yeah.
But Eshi tells her to lay off because he basically saved her tonight. Tara tells her she cannot trust the huntsman of all people, but Eshi tells her that she needs to trust her and her judgment. He could have killed her multiple times and he didn't. She's not under some dick drunk spell. She really feels like she knows him at this point. Then she tells Tara that after tonight, her and the rest of the seven need to stay out of this war with Abina. Eshi will take care of it alone, because if Abina can't take out Eshi, she'll take out the people she cares about the most, and Eshi won't take that risk. Now Tara's even more pissed off, but agrees to stay out of everything and not to contact Eshi until Eshi reaches out first. Tara tells her she has 3 days to finish this, and if not, the seven will come find her, and they'll finish it once and for all, and then she hangs up. Then Eshi uses the phone to make arrangements to have Penn and Sierra moved out of the hospital they're in and into an undisclosed one to keep them safe. Malachi walks into the bathroom after she finishes sorting everything out, and she's just filled with rage and whirls on him to just save it. He was right and she was wrong, and he's like, just get in the shower, but she refuses. He cages her against the counter with his body and tells her being in this life means every choice she makes has consequences, and if she wants forgiveness, go talk to a priest, not him.
Now, I gave you the chance to get in the shower. Since you're still dressed and not in the tub, I'm taking that as you've changed your mind and are going with the other option. Get this dick. Get this dick.
He rips off every article of her clothing and plops her up on the counter, kissing at her neck. She leans forward and takes one of his nipple piercings into her mouth, licking and biting at it. Also, he has his nipple pierced.
Slay.
She wraps her legs around his waist and grinds her bare puss against his bulge.
Pleasure blasts through me, and I whimper. Again, I do another dirty grind, rubbing my whole sex from clit to damn near my perineum over him, and I shudder and grunt. I glance down, and damn, there's something about the sight of my wet saturating the front of his pants that has a proud territorial surge swelling inside me. You like that, huh? Like seeing the mess you're making. Yeah, she does.
He pulls her in for a sloppy kiss, and she can't believe this man hasn't kissed anyone before her because he's basically a pro.
You've made that mess, Lori. Now you gotta get down there and clean it up. Anticipation spikes in my veins, heightening the lust to nearly unbearable levels. It's only been a week since I had that monster dick of his in my mouth, down my throat, but it might as well have been a year, and I'm starving for him.
He whips his dick out, pushes her down to her knees, and slaps it against her waiting lips. She takes him into her mouth using teeth and everything. Then she gives him sloppy, sloppy toppy and pops off to suck his balls.
You a nasty little bitch, aren't you? My answer is to suck on his cockhead, free it with a soft pop, then spit saliva and cum on his dick. As I swallow him back down, he releases a sound that might be a rusty, serrated chuckle or a hoarse swear, maybe both. Goddamn, yeah you are. Give me more of that shit. Oh, she's doing it. She's really sucking on that thing.
He starts fucking her face mercilessly, and she's just taking it. Eventually, she retakes control, and she experiments by rubbing at his back door. He stiffens but doesn't pull back, so she takes that as a green light. She continues, and it's not long before he busts in her mouth. Then he's picking her up and carrying them both to the shower. It's not long before he's hard again, and she's begging for him to fuck her. He slams into her, and she comes instantly. Then he pushes her down to all fours on the shower floor and fucks her that way.
Cupping my chin, he turns my head towards him, and he claims my mouth, kissing me like a dying man. You can't take this good pussy from me, Eshi. Not ever. Promise me. He crushes his lips to mine, draws hard on the bottom lip. Promise me, goddammit, he demands in that same serrated, desperate voice as he pounds me. I promise, Malachi. Yanking free of his hold, I fall back on my hands and glance over my shoulder at him. Fuck your good pussy.
It's his good pussy. Belongs to him.
Cute.
They come together, and as she closes her eyes, telling herself that Malachi is finally hers, but she has to let him go. An hour later, Malachi is wondering what he's going to do with this woman who basically sucked the soul out of his dick and got him to claim her pussy as his. As she sleeps in his bed, part of his brain is telling himself how easy it would be to just kill her right now, but he shuts that thought down immediately. He thinks hard about his complicated feelings for her, and now he's scared he's going to lose her just like everyone else he's ever cared about. He lays down with her and she wakes up, so he asks how she lost her pinky, and she tells him that when she was 16, she was kidnapped and held for ransom, but something must have put them off because they wound up letting her go after torturing her for 2 entire weeks.
I feel like Abina had something to do with that.
Before her mother died, she was trying to figure out who was behind it, but she was killed before she could find Eshi's kidnappers. Her mom always thought Abina could have been behind it, since she was in charge of security at the time. Aside from losing the finger, she was also left with a compulsion to clean obsessively, which is why she was fully cleaning his kitchen earlier. He cuddles up with her and tells her we're all trying to find out how to deal with how the world fucks you up, and she's just doing her best. Then he asks why she didn't kill him, and she just strokes his cheek and asks, who said she won't? But he tells her to answer the question for real. She says because he belongs to her, and there's nothing she won't do for hers. She'll burn the whole world down to protect anyone who belongs to her, and she loves him. He pulls back and gets defensive, saying she does not love him, and she's like, why, because you think you aren't worthy of it? He won't answer, and she tells him people who have seen the darkest parts of humanity deserve love the most. Then they crash together in a kiss filled with emotion. But then Malachi spirals and punches the mattress next to Eshi's head and tells her he knows she's planning on taking what she needs from him and then leaving. As far as he believes, love only ends in loss, so he tells her to get dressed and leave. She tells him that she's only going to leave to protect him from the mess she got him in with Abina, but he just hands her one of his guns for protection and insists she gets out. She sighs and says, okay, fine.
Ugh.
When she's gone, he feels like he made a huge mistake, but decides to do some research on this poison woman. 2 hours later, Jamari calls and sounds really upset, telling Malachi to check his email. He does, and there's an attachment of a video of Eshi tied to a chair and bleeding. She's screaming and being tortured just like she was when she was 16. She's been taken by Abina, and it's some like shitty security grainy ass video.
Jesus.
Then there's a second video. It's a message to Malachi from Abina. She's smiling and telling him that the two of them are fucked for what they did at the compound. Neither of them will walk away from it. Eshi will die, but the rest is up to him. Show up at the provided address and trade himself for her. She'll be released, but likely killed by the family she betrayed. Jamari asks if Malachi is going to go after her, and he says yes, and asks if Jamari knows what to do if he doesn't come back. Jamari says yes, and then says, I love you, before he hangs up.
Aww.
So he's just gotten 2 I love yous in one night.
Aww.
He is lovable.
Yeah.
Malachi is shocked at the words, but piles into his car to get to the address Abina provided. It's an abandoned building with armed guards out front. Malachi is patted down for weapons, but they miss the knife strapped to his leg, so he hands it over willingly to the guard.
What?
They fully pat him down, do a shitty job, and then he's like, oh, by the way, you forgot this knife that I have. Here you go.
Why'd he give it to them?
His wrists are zip-tied, and he's led inside, and as he's walking, he hears a gunshot. The man who missed his knife was punished for the oversight.
Oh.
When his eyes acclimate to the darkness, there's no Eshi, and Malachi demands to know where she is when Abina walks out instead. She chastises him for actually coming for Eshi, but he's still cooperating, so he allows them to strap him to a gurney. Then Abina stands over him, running a knife softly along his throat, reminding him of when she offered herself to him and he rejected her. She's been imagining all the ways she could have him that way, but she won't do her niece's sloppy seconds. Speaking of Eshi, she's not here, and she never was. He feels relief at the fact that Abina doesn't have her, and Abina looks at him with shock when he smiles. She tells him if he doesn't tell her where Eshi is, she'll make his death slow and painful. Give up his woman, and it'll be quick. So those are his options.
Okay, then how'd she get that video of Eshi?
It wasn't Eshi. It was just someone who looked kind of like Eshi.
Oh, fuck.
When he doesn't answer, she stabs him in the arm, but he's still not talking. So she just stabs and cuts all over him with no result. Now Abina's pissed and says, you like Eshi so much? You can look just like her, and hacks off his pinky and then uses a blowtorch to cauterize the stump.
I mean, I guess at least she cauterized it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind.
Yeah.
Then a guard steps out with a phone and hands it to Abina. She takes it and sends the video of her torturing Malachi to Eshi. Little does she know, Eshi doesn't even have her phone, so it's pointless. She has Malachi's burner, and when she checks it, she sees Jamari is calling her. She answers, and he fills her in on what's going on with Abina and Malachi. He's like, you're supposed to be being tortured right now. Abina hasn't found you? They meet up, and he shows her the videos that were sent to Malachi, and now they see Abina's plan clearly. She's using him as bait to lure Eshi. Jamari uses his hacking skills on his laptop to get access to Eshi's cell, and that's when they see the video of Malachi and a message from Abina for Eshi to come to the compound by tomorrow night and kneel before her and confess to treason in front of everyone. Jamari insists on coming along despite Eshi saying absolutely not. He's going after Malachi no matter what, so she tells him, fine, but you listen to my every order. He says, fine, but you need to call the 7 and tell them what's happening. It's selfish not to let them in on this. She knows he's right, so she calls her girls. They make their way to Eshi's cottage, and when they get there, a strange woman is on her porch. Eshi steps out of the car, demanding to know who she is, and then the 7 step out of her front door with their weapons trained on this mystery person. And it turns out this woman is poison, and then she drops the bomb that she's actually Miriam, Malachi's not-so-dead little sister, and she knows how to get him back.
Holy shit!
Eshi holds a gun to her head, berating her for the years of pain she caused Malachi by not coming forward and letting him know she was alive. But she tells Eshi she doesn't know what she's talking about and says she needs a laptop because she has a flash drive they need to see. So she's like, Eshi, shut the fuck up. This is family business. You don't know what you're speaking on.
Yeah, I mean, tell her.
Jamari whips out his and they read the documents on the drive. It's years of correspondence that proves Abina was behind Eshi's kidnapping when she was 16. Eshi immediately runs to the bathroom to vomit in the toilet. Then the girls rally around her and tell her this bitch is going down. Ultimately, they all decide to put their differences aside with Miriam and team up to kill Abina and rescue Malachi. The next night, a bloody and beaten Malachi is paraded in Abina's throne room in front of her and her guards. But then he hears one of the guards talking about how Eshi actually showed up, and now he's terrified for her. She walks through the double doors with her head held high and looks at Malachi with a possessive look on her face. She looks at Abina and is like, "You asked for me, and here I am." The guards grab Eshi and kick her legs out, forcing her on her knees in front of Abina. Abina announces that Eshi is here to answer for the crime of treason, and Eshi is like, "Well, I have an entire list of your lies. How about the one where you said you killed the huntsman? And yet, here he is, alive." She gets Abina to slip up and admit that she'd had Malachi break into her house for the second time to take her out after the first failed attempt. And since dead men can't be hired for hits, it would seem that she lied to everybody.
Oh.
Now whispers are breaking out throughout the guards, then shouts as everyone realizes that Abina put a hit out on Eshi. Abina starts shouting that Eshi's going to die for her betrayal to the family, and then speakers around the room start playing and a projector shows a video of a younger Abina talking about having Eshi kidnapped all those years ago and plotting to take out her own sister.
Oh, get her.
Now, almost everyone in the room is staring at Abina with pure hatred in their eyes. Then, a video starts playing of Abina hiring Malachi to take out Eshi. The room visibly separates, with some people sticking by Abina and the others wanting to back up Eshi now that all of this information is out in the open. The Seven shows up, surrounding Eshi as well, and that's when Malachi spots Abina's right-hand man making a move to attack Eshi. Malachi pushes through the pain and rushes over toward them, tackling the man to the ground, finding a knife and stabbing it into his open mouth, killing him instantly. What a horrible way to die.
Yeah, open mouth.
As she stands up toward Abina and officially challenges her for leadership, Abina just laughs and is like, "You'll never be queen, you dumb bitch." But a challenge has officially been announced, so Abina either has to accept it or reject it and hand over leadership to Eshi. If she refuses both of these options, someone else steps forward saying they'll kill Abina themselves for breaking their law. And now Abina's really starting to realize just how many allies she's lost. Now she's got no choice but to fight Eshi to the death, and they're both given a knife each. The fight doesn't last long, and it ends with Abina getting a knife to the gut and Eshi twisting it. Just when Eshi is about to make the final killing blow, pain radiates through Eshi, and she realizes someone in the crowd shot her in the back. She looks up to see Malachi with his gun drawn, shooting her attacker, killing them instantly. She barely registers what's going on around her as she grips her knife and uses the last of her strength to stab Abina right in the neck. And finally, Abina's dead.
Yay!
Malachi rushes over to her, begging her not to die on him. He can't lose her, but Eshi's body isn't working and she can't move her mouth to reassure him, and she slips into darkness. 3 days later, Eshi's in the hospital. She had surgery for the bullet wound and was told if the shot was even a smidge off to the side, it would have pierced her heart instead of just grazing one of her lungs. Malachi and the entirety of the Seven plus Jamari have been planted in her hospital room watching over her, their new queen, but she's still not awake. Then the door swings open and Miriam walks in, and Malachi is shocked. He doesn't understand how she's alive and here, but he rushes over to her and brings her in for a hug. After a long embrace, they sit down to talk, and she tells him that she is poison. When she'd been beaten in their foster home, she was so injured the doctors don't know how she recovered, but when she was released, she wasn't allowed to contact Malachi, and then she was told he was on the run for killing their foster dad. Then she was recruited, and that's when Poison was born. But she was told family makes you weak, so she stayed away and let him think she was dead. She kept tabs on him from a distance until Abina got involved. They both make peace with the years lost between them, and Malachi vows to get to know the woman she is now. Then they have another long hug, and Eshi's voice is behind them telling Malachi that better be his sister that he's hugging right now.
She's like, "I will kill someone from this hospital bed."
And I believe that.
She would. A month passes and Eshi's back at the compound and officially pronounced Queen of the Mwaji with the Seven as her council. Malachi has even been sworn in and she has formed a reluctant alliance with Miriam. The happy couple stands in front of the entire Mwaji and shares a passionate kiss and exchanges I love yous. The people who stood by Abina are led out to the dais at gunpoint and executed without ceremony.
Oh, nice. Hell yeah.
Then Eshi is just casually like, "Okay, let's eat." So all these people died and she's like, "I'm hungry. Let's go." As they walk out of the room, Malachi swoops her up, telling her it's been 12 hours since he's been inside of her, and food can wait.
But macaroni and cheese, I whine. He pauses in the middle of the staircase and mugs me. Mac and cheese or this dick? When I don't immediately answer, he barks, "Are you serious, Eshi? I'm kidding, damn." I laugh, and scowling, he takes the stairs two at a time until he reaches the second level. I lick a path up the front of his throat into his ear. Later, I get mac and cheese on your dick. Love is about compromise, after all. Shit. He turns, presses me against the wall, and grinds his cock into my belly. Deal.
Gross.
Yeah. I don't know if I, like, want to eat and suck dick.
No.
Mm-mm.
I'd probably throw up.
Yeah, me too.
He carries her inside their room and tells her to take his dick like a good little queen. Once they're on the bed, she climbs on top of him and slides his dick into her. As she rides him, she's like, "Who do you belong to? Who owns this dick, Huntsman?" And he tells her, "It's hers, just like her pussy belongs to him," and starts to play with her clit.
He holds me still as he pounds into me from below. Damn, he's beating up my pussy, hitting my spot over and over, and I'm not going to last. I may not survive it. Wet me up, Oba. Drown me.
They come together, and as they lay in bed, he tells her that his dick belongs to her, but so does his heart. And she tells him he's owned her for a couple of years now. And then she stands up, walking out of the room to go get her mac and cheese. The end.
Cute. What a story. I liked this. I like the characters a lot.
How many red pepper emojis would you give it?
Honestly, I think like 4.5. I really liked it. Liked the story, liked the dialogue, liked the characters. Loved it. What did you guys think of it?
I think I rated it a 3. There was nothing wrong with it. It was entertaining and funny at some parts. I just don't think the, not mafia per se, but like, there was so much going on.
There was a lot going on.
I liked it, though. It was good.
I gave it a 4. I really liked Eshi.
Yeah, she seemed really cool. Love to see a woman in charge.
Yes. Well, next week, we're telling Riley all about The Silver Lining by El Concepcion. I hope we're saying that right. She's one of our followers who is also an author, and she sent this to us and asked us to do an episode on it. So that's what we're doing. And we're going to have Riley look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
The Silver Lining, a Lunar River series. I think it'll be non-human. I think it'll be like people with magic, witches. What is it? What usually goes with witches? Demons? No. Yeah?
Wizards?
Wizards?
Warlocks?
Could be. Gremlin?
And we haven't done gremlin smut yet.
No, we should find one. I think, okay, it'll be magic, non-human. Okay, I think our female main character is going to be a witch. And she is going to be making a deal with another magical entity. But she has to do something in order to make this deal work. And she has to work with another magical man. Maybe a wizard, maybe a warlock. But she has to work with him, and they don't want to work together to complete this deal. But they do work together, and they end up really liking each other. And then they fall in love, bang-a-rang, you know. Yeah, am I close at all?
Magic?
No, yeah, it's like a supernatural creature book, but no, not close.
Fair enough. I can't be every time.
Well, we'll find out next week.
Yeah, we will.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to hear the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I do blind reactions to Reddit erotica every Tuesday.
Yeah, do it.
Please check us out on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast.
Tell your friends, but not your mom, and we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.